want to start right away?
I think I'd like to, because of the many demands that we have on our time. I call to order the meeting of the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee for March the 13th, 2008. I don't have an agenda in my folder.
It's in the book.
Right there in the book.
Oh, I see, I'm sorry, I'm delirious, okay. Is there approval of the agenda? Without objection, the agenda is approved. Is there approval of the minutes as it read for February the 14th, 2008?
I have changes.
Did you send them to us in writing?
I can do that, I would like to make two broad comments, if I may, on the minutes, and then detailed ones I'll be happy to put in. This set of minutes did not include who moved items, who seconded items, and what the actual vote was, which is probably the most critical part of what we do when we vote on things. And it also moved away from where we were and what the board procedures called for, which is action minutes, and got much more into the he said, she said stuff. So it eliminated, or did not include, some of the stuff that's really critical, and included a lot of the things that may or may not be critical. So if we can go back to where we were a month ago, and please be careful about making sure we know who moved, who seconded, and what the actual vote was, that would be helpful, and I'm happy to make the individual wording changes and turn those in, and then we can approve next month.
Thank you very much. This is my first meeting as chairman of this committee, and I wanted to just very briefly mention a couple of the, so the minutes are approved as if read, is there objection?
I think he asked to have them held over so those corrections.
Okay, we'll hold over the minutes for those corrections at the next meeting. I just want to say a couple of things relating to how I would like to see the agenda for this committee operate in the future, and I've discussed this with Mr. Francis in the meeting that we had. But number one, I'm going to begin every meeting of this committee with the operational performance, so that the first item of business, even though it is information, it's very important to us to have this information because of our concentration on customer service and other issues. From there, we will then go, the second numeral will be action items, and the third numeral will be the very few information items which we will have. Other members may feel differently about this, but for my part, I would like to have is only those information items that are clearly needed, and not by way of time filler, so that we have, and it so happens at this meeting, I wasn't involved in setting this agenda for this meeting, but it so happens we have no action items, and we have five information items, some of which I think are more pressing than others.
Two of which probably should have been in another committee.
And two of which may well have been in another committee. But here we have an agenda that was established for me, which I did not have the opportunity to review. But we're going to be tightening up the agenda for this committee. And so, but what we have then is the agenda before us, which we have agreed to. And so the first is communications and service plans for upcoming major events. The other thing I want to say is that because there is a luncheon, which I'm not going to be able to attend because of other pressing matters, but there is a luncheon honoring our distinguished former colleague, Dana Kaufman, at noon today. And because the prior committee did go on for as long as it did, we're going to have very limited time. So I'm going to ask everyone to stay with the essentials, particularly insofar as presentations, but we discussed all of that in our private meeting, how we were going to handle it. So first, we have upcoming major events. I think we have a visit from the head of the Catholic Church, I believe, is coming. And we have also a baseball game or two that is going to happen. Can you give us, Mr. Cato, are you presenting this? Or
Mr. Chairman, Sarah Wilson will be presenting this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we will be...
No, we have to approve this agenda, so in the future we're going to have that new approach.
That's just the first one. And we're skipping over it.
The first one I have is communications and service.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
So I don't know which
agenda I have the one that was sent out. I'm sorry.
This is the agenda in your binder. If you want to borrow in your binder.
Thank you, sir.
Communications and service plans for upcoming events.
Thank you, Mr. Graham, and we will be brief here. I'm joined by Craig Kwasinski, who has been our project manager for coordinating with both the Nationals and also with the papal visit, and Mr. Francis will speak to the service issues, any service questions that you may have that come up. And we're very excited. These are both events that make it exciting to be part of WMATA at this time. So, Craig, if you'd like to speak to our communications plans.
Obviously, the two events which Mr. Graham's already mentioned, season opener for the Washington Nationals, Sunday, March 30th. It's also worth pointing out that is the national opening of baseball. That's baseball's first game of the 2008 season. It will be broadcast on ESPN and national television. Can you stay there for a second? Just briefly, it's worth mentioning we're only 17 days away from the opening pitch. And with the Pope's visit, we're approximately 35 days away. Well, we are 35 days away at this point. Obviously, if you've been listening to the radio or reading the newspaper, Metro is the best option. We're expecting very large crowds for these events. 41,000 fans expected for Nationals opening night. That is a sellout crowd, and we expect sellouts for quite a while into the season. 47,000 attendees expected for the papal mass. That's because there will be seating on the on the field level. Obviously, parking is very limited, and which leads us back to taking Metro as the best option. It's also worth pointing out for the first baseball game, we are expecting the president to throw out the first pitch, and so there will be heightened security and the possibility of magnetometers. So everyone is encouraged to get there very early. Also for the Pope's visit, there will be high security and magnetometers as well. We've been working since June with the Nationals specifically to develop communications plans and service plans to service the new ballpark. I won't go over everything, but obviously we have a new fair media, which is something we're very excited about. And I believe Mr. Cato might actually have the very first issue, which came out great.
What is it?
The Smart Trip cards, similar to the ones that are on the screen.
We're also doing, we have a Metro-specific baseball website. We've had that up since about mid-January, and we have already received approximately 24,000 hits on that website. So it's become a very popular stop at Metro's webpage. We're also working on unique train announcements and station announcements. In fact, we believe we'll have station announcements with Nationals ball players participating in them. The service plans.
Can you stop for a second?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to go through this line by line because I think we tend to agree that we're just going to pinpoint this.
If there's any questions about service or anything that you've heard so far, we can do that.
We're just on a very limited time frame.
I have a question.
Mr. Benjamin was first, and then Mr. Zimmerman.
Those are very attractive cards. I'm looking forward to seeing one closer.
Can we get one?
They're smart trip cards, which are going to last for a long time, and we have a commercial organization advertising on top of them. Could you tell me whether we got advertising revenue from this?
We got significant. We received significant in-kind contributions, including an enormous 24-foot sign out in left field, right above the visitor's bullpen that says, "Go Metro, go Nats, take Metro to the ballpark."
These are going to be out there for 5-10 years. So
well, we have a 1-year contract. We have a 1-year agreement with the Nats to use that logo just simply
yeah,
for.
But I mean, we're going to get. You're saying that that's enough to justify their advertising for.
Well, I mean, I think
years.
That if you have significant advertising out in the ballpark, you have significant advertising in the radio, the newspaper. Every message that the Nationals is having is saying take Metro.
Okay.
And so if we're looking at attracting new riders, if we're looking at bringing our system to people who may not necessarily have considered public transportation, this is an enormous opportunity for
okay.
us.
Okay. Well, let me just pick up on this because I think what we've done is we have a policy issue that's come up here. Mr. Graham just talked about what happened when Target opened in Columbia Heights, which also was a significant event. And if Target came to us and said, hey, you know, we sort of like this and we're going to do one of these with you too, and we'll either give you free advertising in Target and we'll put it in the newspaper all the time, or we'll pay you. Would they go on one of these?
We receive requests like that frequently. We do co-promotion, and it's subject to an evaluation. If it makes a good business sense, then we would partner with them. I mean, for example, we have things with agreements with the Cherry Blossom organizers, for example. And they'll take Metro, and we will do provide them with some advertising space. So, I mean, we recognize...
What you're saying is that something which we have never done before, we have never advertised on Smart Trip cards. From here on in, this is an open area for people to come and ask for advertising. Is that right?
We've advertised before on the Magstripe.
Magstripe, we have.
And that's a fib medium, right. And we saw this as the same. Right.
I think that's fine. The difference being that we issued things for one-day passes, which were going to go away right away. We didn't have long-term advertising, and when we did, they paid for it. There were people who advertised and they paid for it. Now we have this, and this seems to open the door to anybody to advertise on our fair media, including this one. And I just want to know if we're changing a policy, which the board never really got into, but are we changing the policy, and is this now available for whoever wants it?
This is a co-promotion. Rather than an advertising, it's considered a co-promotion, which is not...
Okay, but if I come in and say, I want to do a co-promotion, are we going to say yes to people who want to do it?
We receive these kinds of requests all the time, and so it's subject to an evaluation of whether it makes good business sense for us.
Yeah, and I think what I'm hearing is there is this unknown process, which the board has not approved, that we go through, that says Washington Nationals get to, but the Redskins don't, or Target doesn't.
But the Pope says.
But the, well,
the Pope is going to have a Smart Trip card, isn't it? We're going to have a Smart
Trip card. We're going to have a pass.
A pass.
It's
yes.
very similar, actually, to what MTA did in 1994
we've done that for inaugurations and things
yes,
like that.
Have.
So I can sort of see that on a fair medium that goes away. But this is, in my mind, a different policy. Yeah.
But
this one too. Sir, I'm just wondering what our policy changes here.
Mr. Chairman, I do not believe there is a board policy on this. If this is a policy issue, then we will bring this back to the board for approval. I'm not aware that, given that we've done this numerous times in the past with other fair media, then that expressly implies that we have the ability to do with any fair media. The intent of this one, there's limited number of Smart Trip cards that will have the logo of the Nationals. We believe that a large number of people will take these as collector's items. And it is really reserved for major events like the opening of a new stadium, which is probably a 30-year event, or the inauguration of the president. In the past, we've used, the Magstripe cards. There is a possibility if there is a business advantage, there are large numbers of people who like to use these as collector's items, then we were looking at putting those types of special events on Smart Trip cards. If the board is saying this is a policy change, then I'm not aware that if it was a policy, then we will bring something back to you.
Are you finished?
Well, I guess I hear you, and I understand that you certainly believe in good faith that you're doing something that is consistent with what we've done in the past. I do think, however, that we're doing something that is substantially different, for which the criteria are not really known, and that Target could just as easily make most of those arguments, and then we're into advertising here, and we ought to know what the basis is and how much money we can make. We just talked about advertising being one of the areas where we can make money. I'm sorry.
Mr. Zimmerman?
Mr. Chairman, I guess my view is that this, what's being done here is consistent with policy up to this point, which doesn't mean we shouldn't review it to consider whether there needs to be some specific policy. But I think advertising on fair media is an old practice in Metro. My question is more about, well, let me say first, Mr. Benjamin raised a reasonable question, which is, is there a difference in the way you value the particular medium and what you're offering? And there is a difference between something that's perishable, in a matter of a day or a week, versus something that's there a long time. We charge differently for you to keep a sign up in a Metro station, for a year than we do if you only have it for a month. So, that's a fair question. And I guess I'd like to hear from staff that when these proposals come in, they, on a case-by-case, are valuing what they think the worth of the advertising to the other party is versus the value to us. I imagine that they would say that in the case of this particular promotion, the specific value to us that would not be present like the hypothetical Target case because of the broad exposure of being noted in a stadium in which 40,000 people are going to be present multiple times a week and which, you know, cameras are going to be on and everything else. So probably there's a lot of advertising value to us. And the question is whether that for a year is equal to the perhaps extended period of value. I doubt any credit cards will be around 10 years, but it's around for some period of time. And that's the question for evaluation. But my question is, with these particular cards, I mean, it wasn't clear to me. Is every smart card issued next month going to be this one?
No. We will have, there's a limited production.
Is it on request?
Yes. Or it could be. So if you were going to go purchase a Smart Trip card, you could go to, you have to specifically ask for this card.
This is different. This is one I get because I want it.
There will also be some vending machines, but they will be identified with that card on it, so you know which card you're getting.
The standard one that we've been having is still available if that's the one I want.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, I mean, we may have some, dare I say it, Orioles fans around here who might not want to carry this particular one.
Yes.
But if I want it, I can go get it.
Yes. I'm sorry that wasn't clear. There's a limited production.
That does limit the nuts. I mean, I think that does put a little different color on it anyway. And it also presents the possibility for what I think Mr. Cato alluded to, that if this is a collector's item, it's the sort of thing people may buy and not actually use very much. And it's a little bit like what the Mint is doing to pay for their operations and issuing coins that are intended to promote collection, not be circulated, the difference of which, well, seniorage pays for the operations of the U.S. Mint. We won't necessarily do that well, but there may be some net revenue to be gained because of the fact that people want to put them in their albums as opposed to they may, in other words, purchase another Smart Trip card anyway. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, if I may say, I mean, I think this is a contributing conversation. There's no question about it, but we're drifting a little bit. And we're drifting at a time when we have very little time. And so if we don't remain focused, we're not going to get anywhere near through this agenda. Sarah, is there anything further you want to say about the visit from the head of the Catholic Church?
No, we're very excited about it. This is the Vatican had any choice of the city to choose for the Pope's first visit to the United States. They chose Washington, D.C., and we'll be ready for him when he gets here.
That may have had something to do with the President of the United States being located here.
Or excellent metro service available.
Well said. I can imagine that conversation in the Vatican.
Hi, Mr. Chairman. I understand we're short of time. I just want to make one comment that even though we're putting extra services out there, understand there's going to be a large crowd and it's going to take time to get people through the system. We only can accommodate 15,000 people per hour on Metro Rail. And 41,000 people are scheduled to attend. So it will be a wait when you exit the game. I just want to make sure the public understands that.
Does everybody understand that? Okay,
good, thank you.
Now we go to operational performance. Mr. Francis, do we go back to you or do we stay with our general manager?
We come to me. I'll try to get through this as quick as I can. The committee last time asked me to take a look at focus on some of the bus types that we had, and we focused on CNG, clean diesel, and the hybrid bus. Obviously, you can see the hybrid bus had some problems, and what it was engine problems. There's 50 hybrid buses, but 26% of 13 of them had engine problems, and what that was due to there's a microcomputer within the engine, and that computer measures the temperatures and the got a display here, show and tell too, but it measures the temperature and the exhaust. And what happened was we found out when it rains or when moisture gets in there, there's a failure. Check engine light comes on, shuts the engine down. The good thing about it is Cummings engine will be here, I think, the end of the month,
24th
of the month, with the modification to all of this and any future buses that will come on. You have a question, Ms. Grant?
Did anybody know about this? Did we just discover this because it rained?
No, sir.
Do we know about this?
This is one of those electronic systems that runs you from one end of a vehicle to another, be it automotive or bus. What was happening, and we're not the only one having this problem, you get moisture intrusion, as Mr. Francis said, when you get rain, it gets absorbed into the engine compartment, or when we pressure wash the engine every 6 months. And the bad thing about the flaw in this, it wasn't showing a code that would direct you to this particular unit. So we've been chasing it all over the system. And finally, about 3 months ago, we found out exactly what the problem was, and we've been working with Cummins Engine Manufacturer to come up with a fix for it. And basically, it's a redesign of this unit to make it more resistant to allowing moisture to get into it. Now, we've tested and worked with this with them, and on the 24th of this month, the new units will be installed by Cummins Engine Manufacturer. And we think that, you know, mystery and cutoff won't start, sir, our number one fleet problem on all types of equipment, be they hybrid, be they CNG, be they clean diesel, because of the clean air requirements, we're putting more and more sensors, more and more electronics on these equipment. And when we say engine-related problems, knock on wood, we have not had any hard failures on engines. It's all sensors, computer-type chips. The engines, all of them, are performing quite nicely in our fleet.
Just to clarify.
Yeah.
On this bus system, bus type, we were the only ones that had it, or it was?
Oh, no, ma'am. There's hundreds of these buses running all over the country.
Okay.
Largest fleet out in Seattle, Washington, they have several hundred of them.
And what is the cost of maintenance?
Yeah. Our current cost per mile for the
What would have been?
Our current cost per mile for the hybrid fleet is about.
I'm sorry, I said maintenance. I wasn't clearly kind of.
Well, our current cost per mile for maintenance, that's inclusive of our labor, materials, fuels, and tires for the hybrid fleet, is $1.13 per mile. For the clean diesel fleet, it's $1.19 per mile. And for the CNG fleet, it's $1.51 per mile. Little caveat on the CNG, however, there are some tax credit issues, and that's not included in that CNG. That would close the gap some way.
Okay. We can move to the next slide on the mean distance between failure on the bus continues to exceed its goal of 6,300. The average for the last 7 months still has improved about 4% over the last 7 months. Rail on-time performance, right now I'm happy to report that the rail on-time performance, the overall average is 92%. We have increased on each line from the red line, blue line, AM and PM peak periods. As Mr. Zimmerman mentioned too, one of the things that we have done over the last couple of months is really taking a look at the information that we have gathered. There's been a terminology used in managing the headways, and we really have taken a look at the information that we've gathered each and every month and each and every day from our control centers to take a look at it as far as managing the service. Next slide. I wanted to we can move on. This slide here, I showed you this, and I want to just talk about this briefly. I showed you this slide last time, and what this takes into account, this is the maintenance slide. It takes into account any and every fault or failure that we have. The reason why I wanted to show you that was because this is a tool that we're using in bus and also as access services. It's a similar tool, but they're using this information to manage the system. Now, every fault that you see there does not have a reflection or an interruption on the system, but it does give us a makeup on what we have to do from a maintenance standpoint. The operating personnel also are using a similar type matrix to manage the headways, service recovery type incidents that take place. Next slide. Escalator and elevators. Our escalators continue to be at 95% availability, as well as elevators and escalators, but the elevators are at 97% and the escalators at 95%. I had a conversation with Mr. Graham yesterday, and you'll see a slight change to this slide in the upcoming months. There's some very important information that Mr. Graham would like to see on there that we will gather by the next committee meeting.
Let me say what that is. I mean, I want to have, some of you remember this from years past. We were getting these wonderfully high marks for elevator escalator, but we were missing the fact that certain escalators and elevators were repeatedly going out at particular stations. So we're going to do kind of a dirty dozen thing, which will run over a period of about 90 days so we can see where the repeated failures in this regard are occurring. and we'll be able to focus in on what those problems are, Mr. Zimmerman.
Yeah, and to elaborate a little bit more, I mean, there's the question of the one that's out for a long time, and then there's the one that's out over and over again. And I think that's something we want to have more of a sense of. Also, to what degree is the percentage we're seeing, I mean, I forget the exact number of escalators, for instance, we have, farthing escalators, for example. If you're looking at the percentage, is that literally, you know, if we take the number of escalators and the number of hours of service, it's, you know, 93% of that, you know, hours of service, in fact, they're running? Because people definitely have the impression that it's not quite that high, that they see them out more often than that. And some of the time they see them out of maybe that they just weren't turned on. I didn't realize this was an issue, but apparently it can be. And so if the station manager just hasn't turned it on until someone asks them, is that even something you know?
Then we also have to make the distinction when they're, some of them are being evaluated, accident investigation, state inspection, and so forth. So we'll make adjustments to this slide and some of the information that you asked, Mr. Zimmerman. Well,
and let me ask about one other thing, too, which is not just about the way the information is shown, but one I noticed in particular. You know, there are escalators that, you know, when you have several banks of escalators and there's one out, it's one thing, but when you're tying it up on one level entirely, it's another. And with elevators, it's much more critical. Right now, the elevator from the mezzanine to the lower platform is down at Roslyn. Apparently, it's a rehab project, I guess. But the sign on it, I'm glad there's a sign. It says the sign says that it's to be completed in May. And it's got to have been out a month now already. Now, this basically shuts down the station. The most heavily trafficked station in Northern Virginia is inaccessible to someone in a wheelchair, because they can get all the way down from the surface and then find out they can't, you know, go down to the lower platform if that's the direction of train they need. And the times I've been there, I haven't seen anybody working on it. Now, you know, I know there's all kinds of issues about scheduling things, but I would think that on something like that, you'd really be, you know, crashing to get a project like that done in a hurry, as opposed to one in which is important but doesn't completely tie the thing up. So, you know, maybe you can get back to me on that one, but I'd really like to find out about, you know, why that's like a multi-month project for something that so limits access to a major station. Thank you.
Ms. Hutchins?
I think in addition to that is the time in which you choose to take them out. I know that we have to rotate this in order to meet the obligation of trying to keep them serviced. But to the extent that weather conditions or seasonal conditions can affect that, I think it's very important, because it's vastly different for someone that's a wheelchair to have to spend their time in winter and inclement weather trying to do the shuttling back and forth versus other times of the year. So I just have some complaint of that, and to be out all of the period of winter and back in service in spring, and everybody says, well, wow, but maybe there are only so many you can choose, but I think you should choose carefully.
I think you raise a very good point. I think timing, we need to take a look at the timing on some of the elevators and escalators. We're doing something similar to that with our maintenance plan.
Let me just, you know, I think the comments that my colleagues have made have really been very incisive. But I hope that during my tenure as chairman of this committee, we will have a sign machine that creates information transfer on not only on the issues of, you know, increasing the speed of the repair and the other questions, but, you know, just simply gives people good information and that common sense is applied. And, you know, I have dedicated myself to this endeavor. And so it sounds kind of supercilious, but I think it's very important that we get some professional looking signs where people can be told what's happening. And so you've said you're going to work with us on this, haven't you?
Yes, that's one thing that I've heard loud and clear from the committee as well as from the RAC committee, is that we need to do a better job of informing our customers on exactly if there's an outage, what it is. And I agree with Ms. Hudgens, we need to look at the time and how we select the different escalator and elevators when we're going to do repairs on them.
Common sense.
Yes, sir. The last slide, As mentioned, we're going to have a presentation next month to discuss metro access, on the metro access ridership. But I just wanted to point out that Mr. Ken is doing a good job of working with his contractor and what I call his sub-vendor, who's the taxi operation right now, because ridership has increased, but they've worked extremely hard on their on-time performance to raise that back up to the level. And it's also reflected in the amount of missed trips, as you can see, that's below the goal line, which is good in this case.
Just so that I understand the measurement here, this is all done as a percentage of completed trips. Is that right?
Scheduled trips, I believe. Scheduled trips.
Completed trips. So if a trip is scheduled but not completed, that's not part of this. So if somebody is really late beyond the 30 minutes and therefore they don't actually do the trip, it doesn't even show up.
Right.
Mr. Benjamin, just to clarify, the on-time performance number is reduced by any trip that is not completed within the pickup window.
Okay, you're saying...
So that means whether the missed trip aspect is not really so much the issue, is that if the trip is not delivered to the customer during the 30-minute pickup window, then it's considered not on time and therefore reduces that number down.
I understand that, but it's then divided by completed trips. So it
goes
out of the numerator and the denominator, and therefore doesn't have any effect at all.
Well, no, the measure is actually a little bit more detailed than that. It does factor in, and not all of that is reflected in the definition that's on the slide, that missed trips is added into the calculation on one side, and the no-shows are added into it on the other side. So, I mean, all of those are represented in the calculation.
So in this calculation, it isn't really completed trips. It's completed trips plus missed trips?
But, right.
That are in the denominator, what you're dividing by.
Exactly. Okay. So we can update that in the next presentation.
Yeah, because it looks like it disappears completely and you never get any statistics on it.
Right. No, it is there. I apologize for that.
Thank you.
Okay. This is very good. I mean, these are the types of discussions I hope to have every month on the issue of performance. Our next item is bus procurement update.
Mr. Chair, if I could ask a question, how long do you wish for this meeting to continue? Because I understand there is an event at noon.
Well, it's 11:37.
Right. I just want to make sure.
Do you have a specific time in mind? It sounds like you have something in mind. When do you want the meeting to end?
No. I didn't have something in mind.
No, you can tell us when you want the meeting to end, and we'll end it. I mean, we'll talk until we're stopped.
I would imagine you need 15 minutes.
Okay, so you think that we should end by 10 minutes to 12?
Yeah, at quarter to 12.
Well, then that's not 15 minutes. You're giving us 12 minutes for the remaining items.
I think
it's going to be a challenge to do it in 15 minutes.
Okay,
all right,
it will
we
be.
Have a challenge. This board has a lot of challenges. All right, go ahead. All right, so now we've got, you can see the new buses. Can you see the buses? Bring up the new buses so everybody sees what they look like. These are the new buses. Do you like them?
That's how they work.
I think if I could, Mr. Chairman, just briefly brief. We've got two bus procurements ongoing. It's a piggyback with the 22 NABI CNGs. All 20 those buses begin their procurement process over in Hungary. 10 of them are here in the United States. The other remaining of them are in shipment now. The procurement's moving along very nicely and on target. We should start seeing some of these buses here in April, next month, actually.
And that's not the new color scheme.
This is not the new color scheme. This actually walks you through the process. They begin their life in Hungary. They put them on a train, go through Germany, put them on a ship. They come over to Charleston, South Carolina. They wind up in Anniston, Alabama for final assembly, and they're driven here. But the long story short, the procurement's going well. We've got a pretty good partnership developed with our bus manufacturer. These 22 buses will go to Bladensburg to maximize our CNG infrastructure.
Okay. Next.
Our second procurement is our multi-year procurement with New Flyer to build us initially 203 hybrid electric buses. The board allowed us to award the base and the option. That actually saved the authority about $2 million to do that, so they'll be both concurrently. First pilot bus will be here in August, and we're on schedule to do that. We've had a series of very productive pre-production meetings. The first production bus will then be here at the end of August. By the end of November, the first 50 buses will be here. By the end of February, 133 of those will be here. And everything is on target for all 203 to be delivered by the end of June 2009. There are additional three option years within that contract should we come back to the board and sit down and have a discussion on where we move forward from there.
Okay, but this is the new look of the bus.
It's a new look. They are BRT, bus rapid transit design, no more cracker boxes. The distribution of these buses, which is important, working with our planning group, there are 161 42-footers. This is the hybrids again, 22 of the 62-footers, 20 37-footers. And the way they're distributed at the end of the day, it gives us some parity in our fleet average age by region, by jurisdiction. Maryland will be getting 97 of the new hybrid electrics. That fulfills our resolution to give them the top out their 50 board resolution. Their average fleet age will be 717 in Maryland. The district will get 81 of these. That'll make their average fleet age 693. Virginia will get 25. That makes their fleet average age 712. Our overall fleet age at this point will be 7.06. Lowest fleet age we've had in my tenure here at the authority, so we'll be fielding a pretty darn good fleet. With that said, though, there'll still be 43 buses in the fleet over 15 years.
Mr. Zinner and Mr. Benjamin.
I'd note that while there's still a few that'll be over 15 years, we don't have any that are 35 or 40 years old.
Absolutely.
Not that long ago that the bus that passed in front of my house was a 1964 GMC bus.
2000, sir.
So it's not that long ago. Like I said, it was a 35-year-old bus. So we have made a lot of progress in this. I definitely like, this is a nice picture of the outside. You actually have to be on one of these buses to appreciate the benefits on the interior. And those that I've seen of this manufacturer and this style, which I believe they use in a number of places in the country, including Los Angeles, are certainly much nicer than the buses we have had up to this point. The buses have been getting better over the last 10 years. This is a step up. That has to do with, the design of the bus from a passenger standpoint. Most of these are hybrid electric.
Yes.
Of this, what's the total? What is it?
22 CNGs and 203 hybrid electric.
203, for which the bill is?
The bill? The cost?
203 for the 203.
I'm sorry. $123
million. $123
million? $123 million for the 203.
Which is how much a bus?
They're, the 40 footers are, again, keep in mind we're buying three different lengths of vehicle. The 42-footers are $539,000, the 62-footers are $795,000, okay. And the 37s are $531,000.
Okay, just it's $537,000 for the basic bus that's most of this order.
Yes.
Basic transit bus.
$539,000.
Right. So $539,000. So it's $540,000 a bus.
Yes, sir.
In the previous presentation, we were looking at the slide that showed the bus repair performance record, and we saw that our hybrids have at the moment a horrendous record.
Well, your fiscal year to date, all three technologies are performing double digits reliability. Admittedly, the CNGs are the best. They're averaging about 26,000.
But the hybrids are spiked. You have that one chart you showed us where you've got this huge.
And the primary issue is not hybrid related. We have not had any battery failures on the hybrid system. The primary failure is this little device right here, which I think you might have been out of the room when I did the show and tell. It's called an ultra-compact module.
In your presentation.
And we are addressing this issue. We hope to get this behind us by the end of this month, actually.
So my question is, is this different than, this is on the manufacturer that you bought from so far. You don't think you're going to have any of that kind of problem with these?
This is the same manufacturer, New Flyer, and we're working closely with both the engine manufacturer.
Oh, it is and New Flyer.
These are New Flyers. This is a Cummins engine issue. Which a critical point everybody needs to know moving forward with the technologies and the new clean air requirements of 07. Really, the primary engine family moving forward for either hybrid, CNG, or clean diesel is the Cummins ISL family. That's it. That's the only game in transit right now. Caterpillar is doing some things out there, but that's the only game in town. So we really were partnering very heavily with Cummins. As a matter of fact, staff is meeting with them as we speak, and to continue to work with them on all these.
In many areas, we don't have very many vendors to choose from.
Now, as it relates to
my point simply was that we're now making a very large purchase in a technology that at the moment is our least reliable in our fleet and our most expensive bus by a significant order of magnitude.
True.
If we were going to spend that $123 million and purchase, say, CNG buses, how many buses would that purchase?
Well,
same amount of money.
The average CNG bus is, we're quoting it about $389,000, so the difference to, or the capital cost for the vehicle.
If I had $123 million to spend, and I had, what do you say, 380 a bus?
389.
What does that work out to?
Yeah, I know.
What did you get?
I didn't bring my calculator, I'm sorry.
I always like it better when the people on that side of the table do this faster than I do. Hmm.
It's nearly 1.5.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be somewhere.
It's nearly 1.5, so that you have
close to 200 buses, 180
yeah,
buses.
You would improve the numbers significantly.
Again, I make the point that 2-3 years ago when we had this argument, and you know, Mr. Graham and I pointed out that you could achieve the environmental benefits and buy a whole lot more buses. And now what we're finding is not only are we buying an extraordinarily expensive bus, but it's the least reliable one we have in the fleet, so we have to get a show and tell about the problem and why they're fixing it. And you know, that's the choice that the previous administration in Maryland made for Maryland. When this bus is basically going to Maryland. So they're getting fewer buses than they could get, a lot fewer buses, and at the moment, the least reliable bus we have.
That may spark other discussion in the remaining 4 minutes of this committee.
Well, I'd like to talk about that, but I'd also like to talk about another item in this presentation.
Well, how many items are you going to talk about?
Two.
Two. Well, do you want all 4 minutes that are remaining?
I don't know. We'll see. I do want to comment on the fact that the numbers that we just did do not include infrastructure costs or fuel savings or any of the other issues that are very important in this. And so it's not as simple a set of calculations as the one that we just made. And just leave it at that so we don't go back and forth several times. We've had pretty substantial infrastructure costs on CNG. Going back one page on the page that shows the $123 million which we approved, if I understand correctly, does that entirely use up all the money in Metro Matters for 2010 for bus rolling stock? Or is there still some money for an additional buy?
2010, there are still replacement bus funding in 2010.
I'm sorry, there's still
in
more buses we can buy?
In the budget, replacement budget, Metro Matters replacement budget, mm-hmm. there's still funding available for that replacement number.
And that's the $60 million?
That's the 59,903. Yes,
okay,
sir.
So what you're saying is we can go through the 59,9, and then we have $95 million of buses that we don't have any money for.
That's some decisions have to be made, yes, sir.
So you're saying within Metro Matters, there are no dollars for those buses?
Not for FY11, no, it's 12.
Well, I'm just saying, these were originally planned to be within by FY10, right? The entire buy, or are these deliberately beyond FY10. Trying to figure out whether we bought the number of buses we said we were going to buy. I mean, this is really following on where Mr. Zimmerman was. Did we buy the number of buses that we thought we were going to buy year by year, or are we going to, through FY10 and Metro Matters, or are we going to have a shortfall in the number of buses, and what's that worth?
Well, our target has always been 100 buses a year for replacement buses.
But okay. What's happened from a budgetary standpoint is a delay. All of the money and the quantity of buses have right-shifted in time. So you're seeing what originally would have happened inside the funded terms of Metro Matters shifting out to the right. So the 11 and 12 is not part of the funded Metro Matters.
But they're buses that we would originally have thought we were going to buy within Metro Matters, buy 10.
Right.
When we put it together, we said 100 buses plus expansion buses, right? How many buses are we not going to buy in Metro Matters because we don't have money?
Actually, when we look back at that, the original Metro Matters agreement
didn't quantify the number of buses to be bought to the IRP.
I'm not talking about the legalities. What did we think we were going to buy that we're not going to buy?
I'd imagine it's the 149. It's the 149. FY10, the 100 buses, and the 49 buses in FY12.
It was about a year or so delay getting started in the major bus procurement. So it didn't get bought early in the program.
But there also is not enough money for us to catch up.
The cost per vehicle is higher than what was estimated.
Right. That was the other thing. Back when Metro Matters was put together, we were assuming $450,000 a bus. So the unit cost has eaten into the quantity of dollars to be spent.
So we have at least 100 buses that we're not going to buy, or is it
150.
The last two
items,
$95 million worth of buses we're not going to buy.
The contract is in place. The intent is to buy them. They will be funded out of the next year.
You can't buy them out of Metro Matters.
Correct.
Okay. That's what I'm trying to make sure I understand.
Yes. They're part of what we call the tail to Metro Matters. Yeah.
Beyond Metro Matters.
Yes.
It should have been. Well, it could have been. Well, that's all the time we have.
Right.
We do have two very important items, which on the Metro Matters program, one of which, the most important, in my opinion, of the whole agenda, was the briefing on urgent unfunded capital needs. And I'm going to ask the committee if you would like to take just a few more minutes to have this briefly presented. We have a report preceding it, which would have been in a very orderly fashion, the progress that we've made on Metro Matter progress, and you can review that at your leisure. But I think we should have the significant elements of the fourth of the last item, unless you disagree.
Mr. Chair, I think both of these items are very significant, and I would like to give it the proper time and discussion. So if we could bring these back,
okay.
I mean, we could.
We do it at the board meeting in 2 weeks?
Or before the board meeting?
It's information, but it's, you know, what I'm saying is, could we have a presentation as part of the board meeting as opposed to doing
yes.
it in committee? Do it there.
We're prepared to do that.
And you'd only wait 2 weeks as opposed to a month.
Well, I think we could wait 2 weeks.
Yes, so we can do it as part of the board meeting.
It's very significant information.
Yes.
Okay. Well, then, without further business, this meeting is adjourned at approximately 11:40.